Before we start today's sermon, let's take a few moments to worship the Supreme One, the infinitely compassionate One, the winner of His own defilements, the defeater of Mara, the Lord Buddha. So let's take a few moments to worship Him by chanting Namaskara 3 times all together and with me.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
The month of April is a very, very special month, especially for the people of Sri Lanka. Because this is the month that the Sri Lankans will have their New Year's. And that's why, as you will notice, it's very, so today we have very little people today because of the New Year's. And I think I was very fortunate to be able to learn about the New Year's. Because growing up, yes, my parents would have shown me things here and there, but only when I came to the monastery was I able to see the true Sri Lankan New Year. And I think I was very fortunate to be able to see the meanings behind the things that they do. And I do want to explain some of these because I think it's very interesting. Because if you really think about it, traditions and cultures come from some sort of reason. There has to be a reason behind it. Or else nothing just comes from thin air. There has to be something that pushes a tradition to become a tradition or a culture to become a culture. And this Sri Lankan and this Sinhala and Tamil New Year is something that for the last couple of days, actually weeks maybe, has been running through my mind. And it's very interesting. It is very interesting. So I want to explain some of these things. I am not the best person to explain about everything about this New Year because, trust me, I don't know everything. But there are some really interesting things, very interesting things that once you look at it and once you look at the deeper meaning, it's really interesting and to understand why, you know, these people in the past did what they did. So the first thing, normally when I think of Sri Lanka and the Sinhala Tamil New Year, the first thing that comes to my head is the food. I think food is something that every culture has different. It has a very different variety. But when it comes to the Sri Lankan Tamil New Year, there is a specific set of food. And not only that, there's a tradition where everyone in the beginning of the day will come together and have almost like a breakfast together. Nowadays, this is very, very rare. Children and parents sitting at one table having a meal is becoming more and more rare, unfortunately. Because parents are very busy with their lives and children are very busy, you know, with their lives. If there's four people, four busy lives, to be able to sit down at one table and have a meal is becoming more and more rare. Because once you're at a table with the entire family, so usually, you know, maybe cousins or maybe relatives will come over as well, there's one thing that you get to feel, and that is a feeling of being one. Because when we think about our own lives, we are very busy. We've got very different things to do, right? Some of us have to wake up early in the morning to go to work, whereas others have to wake up early in the morning to go to school. Some of us say, if you're retired, and there's other things you have to do. But we make our lives extremely busy. And that feeling of busyness makes us feel that, okay, even though we're busy, you know, I'm a single person, they're a single person, and there is no we, there's just an I, which gives rise to this selfish feeling of me. It gives us a selfish feeling of, wait, I'm here, what am I going to get? What am I going to receive? I want something. I want this. I want that. But once you're at a table with more people, now, yes, you can get this feeling of this is my family, but what you have to realize is you are part of a whole. You are just one. You feel that you're one, but you are part of a whole. A bigger group, a bigger community. And then, for example, when you want something, the first thing you do is you check if other people want it as well. You check if, does the person on my left or my right want the same thing? If they do, before you serve yourself, who do you serve? You serve those on either side or who needs it. Which gives us, this gives us idea of community. Now, the reason, and that also gives rise to this feeling of giving. Before I eat, I want other people to eat. So it's not giving, you know, I'm going to give part of my meal. No, I'm giving before I even have it myself. I want to give it away. You're giving the best part away. So normally they do a Buddha Puja as well, not to forget, which they give the first and foremost portion, the best portion to the Buddha. And then they serve to each other. But the one thing that I remember learning, and I remember my parents doing as well, which I, to this day, are always at awe, is that after they have a meal, the first thing they do is they pack things to give away to neighbors, to relatives, to anyone, you know, anyone that they can see. Literally, if they see anyone, the first idea is, how can I give this plate of delicious food and dessert away? But that's not the one, that's not the thing that always was something that I really inspired me. But it's what happens after they receive the plate. See, this reminds us of this concept of what you give is what you get. So usually, say, family A would pack something and give to family B. When family B receives the plate, right, they have to give the plate back, right? That's just normal etiquette, right? However, something that, especially in this Sri Lankan New Year, that they always do, is they never give the plate back empty. Because what you give is what you get. So what do? They pack that plate with something else and then give it back. It could be sometimes it may not be, you know, a three-course meal. Maybe it's just a biscuit packet. But they'll make sure that it will never exit, or they'll never return to the hands of the owner empty. Which really makes us think, you know, the people in the past always had this idea, I want to give, I want to help another person, regardless of what I have. Because they'll give, you know, not they'll give part of their best, the best thing that they have away. Not thinking, what am I going to get? Not thinking, well, would they, next year, would they give me something better? No, it's just, how can I give? So they never give the pen, the plate back empty. Instead, they make sure there's something there. I mean, that sort of mindset is a mindset of a great person. See, this is something they do in the New Year's, but I really want you to think about this. Are you a person who does this? If someone helps you, are you looking for another way to help them back? Someone gives you something. Do you always want to help them back? Or are you just someone who just likes to take? You know, this is my gift. This is mine. You know, you're helping me. Or are you someone who's always waiting to help someone else? Give away. Because there's three sort of people in this world. there's one sort that always wants to take. Always wants to take whatever they can. Whenever they find a chance to take, they take it. Right? Second sort of group of people is they share. They share half of their things. But the third sort of people, they're willing to give it all away. If someone needs their help, they don't half give it. They give their maximum effort, regardless of what they'll receive in the end. They may not get a plea, they may not get a thank you, they may not get, you know, you're a good person. They may even get scolded, but they're willing to help no matter what, no matter the person. See if you have that sort of mindset. Willing to help anyone regardless of anything. Because when it comes to helping, there's a feeling that, you know, I'm going to help the people that I like. You know, my friends I help, my parents I help. But, you know, those people that I don't like, you know, these so-called enemies of life, people that I don't like, I detest, those people, I'm helping them by not helping them. But see if you have, you know, these preferences. I like helping these people, but I don't like helping those. Because these people that, you know, I don't know if they're going to shout at me, scream at me. Always trying to protect who? Me. I have to be protected. So I'm going to help the people that I know that's going to enjoy or who's going to appreciate my help. Those who don't appreciate, no, don't want to help. See if you have that sort of mindset. If you do, try to see everyone as the same, and help everyone as you possibly can, regardless. You know, it's very, very easy to help, you know, younger people. You know, when a child comes up to you, it's very easy to come and help them, because, you know, you feel that they're vulnerable. But let's say there's a person who is, say, you know, 6'3", really big and muscular, and they ask for your help. You may feel reluctant to help because you think they can help themselves. Why is that? Why do you see a difference between these two? Because in reality, they're both what? They're both as vulnerable as each other. Just because one of them is taller than the other, or one of them is bigger than the other, one of them is smarter than the other, doesn't make them less or more vulnerable. They're a mind. Helping one another. So that's one thing. That's only one thing that they do. Now, I remember, you know, in the Sri Lankan and the Singha Tamil New Year, right, that, you know, sometimes we have these so-called festivals. Well, you have different events. So they're like running races, right? With you get to the community and you have running races, three-legged races. Now, there are some of these events are very strange. As in, where do they come from? We don't know. A very weird one that I've seen before, but I've never really thought about it. It's called, the literal translation of this game, this New Year game, is called the Grease Tree, right? Which is called the Grease Gaha. And it's very interesting. Why do they make such a game? I don't know. But it has great meaning behind it. So I want to explain this, right? So basically, there's one big... Usually it's a metal pole. On top of the pole, the flag. So the aim is to go and capture or to take the flag. However, it's difficult. Why? Because this is all covered in grease. Right? Grease. And those of you who have never touched grease, trust me, grease is one of the most messiest substances in the world. If it gets on your hands, it's everywhere. It just gets everywhere. And it's very slippery. So what you realize is, you know, so normally what happens is the first person will come up and they'll try to climb the tree. So they go full on bear hug the tree and they push themselves up. But no matter how hard they push themselves up, the grease will always bring them back down. And then there's the other smart person who takes something and tries to remove all the grease, right? With maybe some shopping covers or some sort of cloth, and they try to remove the grease. Now, grease leaves residue, and that residue is as slippery as grease, right? It leaves a thin layer of grease. So you can wash it off, unless you don't wash it with, say, like really strong soap, you leave grease on it. And that's usually the first 2-3 people. They try by themselves, and they can't do it. And then comes usually the people who've done this before or seen it happen before. And what they do is they're in a team of maybe 3 or 4. And they help each other by becoming the tree itself. So basically, one person, usually they're holding the tree, right? Grabbing the tree for dear life. And they're helping one another grab the flag. Now, the game itself is a very weird game, right? You know, with grease and a tree and a pole, and they had to catch the flag. However, the meaning behind it is that it reminds people, anyone who watches, that to do something, you can try by yourself. I mean, you could, technically, by yourself go and catch this flag. But it's when you work as a team, when you work with each other, helping each other. So there's always going to be the one on the bottom. Will that one on the bottom get the flag? No, because all that the one at the bottom has to do is be as strong as they possibly can and hold the next person up. Only one person will get the achievement of the flag. The rest, nothing. So sometimes you're going to have to help another person without getting the achievement yourself. But once that person gets the achievement, now everyone gets the what? Gets to share the goal, gets to share the reward. Now, is that not like Nibbana? Sometimes, the people before us, all they've done is created the platform for us to climb. All they've done is made a platform for us to climb. Because if it wasn't for them, we won't be where we are now. Think about the things that the people in your life have helped you. Your teachers, right? You know, a random stranger that just showed you directions to a place. That random stranger is a person who helped you get there. If it wasn't for them, would you ever capture the flag of Dhamma? But once you get it, that reward is rewarded to the entire world. Therefore, now what do? You share the reward with others. I mean, these are beautiful, almost symbols. Beautiful symbols. Now, I was explaining, not this, another game with some young children from another country. And this is the what's called, it's called the eating the buns, right? So basically what happens is there's a bun which is suspended with some string. And without using your hands, the winner, the person has to eat the bun, and the winner will be the one who eats the bun the fastest, basically. Now, I remember whenever I was ever able to compete with in these sort of games, I'd be very competitive, right? Like to the point that I remember every year I've contributed to the bunny scammer, I'd either become first, second, or third. Never anything else. So I was explaining to these children what you have to do, right? The tactics and whatnot. And I was explaining to them that the first thing you have to do is, you know, you have to, without using your hands, try to, you know, take a massive bite, rip it off the string, right? Because when it's on the string, it swings. You have to rip off the swing, the string, and it's usually on a very clean platform, and you can fall down, and you can take it off of that without using your hands. When I said that, I was like, wait, isn't this what animals do? You know, try their very best, right, to catch something with their mouth. For example, right, say birds. They can't, they have their claws, but they don't attack with their claws. They have to use their mouth. And so when their prey runs away, they have to try their very best to what? To catch it with their mouth. And then, you know, try to stop it from moving, and then gobble it up as fast, and literally wolf it down as fast as they can. So that game is to remind us about what? What is that game reminding us about the what? The four great hells. So when I used to say very proudly, you know, I used to get first, second, or third in this, and I'm like, that means first, second, third. That means, you know, I was also in the four great hells. If I can do it very fast, that means, you know, I was a very good animal. So even these sort of games, they are there to remind us something. Remind us about, you know, some part, and to instill virtues and values, but also remind us. I want to explain one more game, which I think is very symbolic and very symbolic towards, towards this path to Nibbana. Because the Singhala Tamil New Year is very intertwined with the Dhamma as well. There are reasons why, and I'll explain one other game, and it's called the Blind Pot. Literal translation: the Blind Pot. It's called Kana Mutti, right? And what this game is? It's like a similar game is with piñatas, where you hang a piñata and you're blindfolded and you hit the piñata. But the Sri Lankans play a more extreme version, where we have a clay pot that's suspended, right, from a tree usually. Right, it's suspended from a tree, and usually they have like milk, I think, inside. Yeah, water inside, and there's usually three or four. And they blindfold, and they hand you a baseball bat or some sort of stick, and they turn you around 3-4 times, and they let you go. So this is very similar to our journey to Nibbana, and I'll explain. Because when we come to this world. We are as blind as a bat. I don't mean physically. I mean, you can see once you're, you know, a couple of weeks old, you can start seeing. But you're blind to the reality. You can't see where you're going. And then there'll be, you know, the rest of the people that are shouting, go left, go left, go left, go right, go right. There'll be people just trying to get you to a place. Only if you hone in to one voice, one correct voice, and you follow that voice to the letter. Right? So if they say left, you turn left, go forward, you go forward, you know, take a step back, you take a step back. And when they say swing, you swing at the right time, at the right place, with the right amount of force, at the right amount of angle. And then the pot will break. Now, what else is like that? What else is like, you know, you have to hone into a single voice and follow that single voice, whereas every other voice will try to get you places. In life, that's exactly the same thing that happens. There are people who tell you, you know, to be happy, what should you do? Go become a doctor. Go become an engineer. Go become a lawyer. Right? Go to this country and you'll be happy. Go to there, you'll be happy. You know. We're trying to colonize Mars. Let's go there and we'll be happy. Eat this, you'll be happy. Do this, you'll be happy. You know, start doing this and you'll find happiness. Various people will say various things, but if you hone into one voice, that one voice will say, happiness isn't there. Happiness is inside of you. And that one voice that talks to, that talks about the truth. When I mean one voice, not a single person, there'll be a group of people, a very small group of people, who will be showing you the right direction. Who knows they want to help you and they want to take you to the right direction. Because they are the previous winners of the Kanamurti. So they say, you know, come forward. Take a step forward. Keep going forward. You've got this. One step to the left, one step to the right. Okay? The pot is only 2 feet above you. Right, very close. Alright, take your shot. And they swing. If you listen to that voice, listen to the group of voices, you will hit the pot. If you listen to that teacher, you will hit the pot. And then you join them. Because once you hit the pot, you raise up your blindfold and you realize, oh, the path I was going on was the correct path. Now I can see clearly. Whereas everyone else? I mean, you look around and everyone else is with their bats ready to play the game. And blindfold, as blind as a bat. I mean, all these games have its symbols. And it's absolutely amazing to I think I'm very fortunate to be a person who have seen these. I get to see these, you know, not every year, but every so often we get to see these sort of games. But now, looking back at it, I understand why we used to play these things. Because we have to remember, culture, you know, these traditions come from a reason. There has to be a reason why they did this. There has to be something that drove them to think, okay, we're going to do something like this. Play this sort of game. And in the New Year's, there are times where, you know, there's a time where you're not supposed to do any work. No housework, nothing. Because that time is dedicated for one thing, one thing only. Because work is for yourself. That time is dedicated for others. Helping another person. Going to the temple. I mean, they did that. So, you know, they are able to do so much merit, so much good deeds. That's why I think I'm very fortunate to be able to see this in a different light. So, you know, we have our New Year's coming up, right? We have our New Year's on the 13th and 14th of April, right? Very close. And, you know, these traditions, I want you to all, while you go through these traditions, while, you know, you are doing your rituals and whatnot, I want you to think about this deep meaning. I want you to think about, okay, why are we doing such a thing? Because once you do it with the meaning, it will give more impact. And the more the impact you make, it's driving your mind to go forward, to finally get a swing. Just so you can, you know, you'll be ready to take a swing. You see, the Sri Lankan Tamil New Year is a very interesting time. It's very interesting. Because, again, like, you know, I wasn't someone who, because growing up in the UK, we won't have everything here, right? Unfortunately not. I wish we did. But something that I was able to do is, as, you know, coming to the monastery and looking at this through this angle, you can see the great meaning that they have behind all of these sort of things. So this is why I really want you, whenever you do, on the 13th and 14th of April, to actually go through every single ritual, but ask yourself, what is its meaning? Why am I doing this? What is its deeper meaning? So those of you who will be at the monastery, right, we'll be doing not these games, of course, but we'll have the other rituals. Maybe our noble hearts will play these games. But we have to ask ourselves, like, why are we doing this? We are very fortunate. I think we're very fortunate to be in a time and place where we're able to look at life with a different lens, through the lens of the Dhamma. We're very lucky. Because now, no matter what you do, you get to see things differently. Colors are all the same. Images are all the same. But the feeling you get is different. The feeling you get is different because you're seeing things you've understood, right? Or you've understood, or you're beginning to understand how everything is cause and effect, how everything is a manifestation, how everything is like this. And now when you see things, of course you see it as it is. But now you have a feeling that, oh, okay. Although I feel this to be fixed, this is what? Cause and effect. Although I see this to be, you know, a fixed pot, this pot is also what? Cause and effect. You're now seeing the world in a different light. When you used to see things as a fixed pot and you didn't question this pot, now you're asking, why do I feel this to be fixed? Why do I feel this to be, why do I feel this has a past? Why do I feel this pot has a future? Because does this pot actually have a past? Does this pot actually have a future? No, the pot is a pot at this moment. For example, someone smashes the pot. What breaks? The pot? Is it the pot that breaks? Very simply, if you were to look at it in a very, you know, subjective view, it feels as though, you know, the pot is the one that broke. The pot broke, and it's a very good pot, it's a very bad pot. Because once you see a pot, you automatically give it labels. What sort of pot is it? For example, you see this pen, you've already given it a label. It's not just a whiteboard pen to you. It's a black pen. Not just a black pen, it's a black pen that I've used. If you use this before, you know this black pen. So you see this and you don't see black pen. You have, you know, different, you've already given it labels. Now, it's not the labeling that's bad. For example, you know, forever you'll think of, you'll see this and the first idea that comes to your head, it will be a black pen. That's not going to change. But what will change is this idea that this black pen is fixed. Because if you really think about it, nothing, if we were to, you know, someone else to hit this pot and it was to, if it was to break, what is it that actually broke? Because when you really think of it, breaking is just something that we feel. For example, right? This is when my artwork is amazing. Wait, let's see if I can. It's going so well. Does that look like a pot? Yeah, good. If we were to zoom in on a single part, let's say we took this part and we were to zoom in, what is it that we will see? I mean, let's not get into too much science, but I want to get into, you know, something here, right? What you'll see is, you know, this is the wall, and in this wall you have for now, we'll call it clay particles, right? Or clay dust, right? If you want, you can talk about this in atoms or whatnot. Same thing applies. Now, the reason why these, oh, here we go, we've got a pot here as well, perfect. The reason why this pot is solid is because of what? Because these, all these things have what with them? There is a force keeping them together, right? Which we lovely call bonds, right? They're bonded to each other. Now, there's bonds between each and every one of these so-called pot dust, or we'll call it clay dust for now, right? Between every clay dust, there's some sort of bond that has been made. That's why it's a solid. Now, we learned this in school, right? We've learned that for something to be a solid, all the particles are very closely packed to each other. Right? If something is liquid, is what? There's some distance and gap, and so it can flow in each other. Something is a gas, it's not connected in any sort of way, and it's whizzing about. So this is a solid. So if I was to, you know, make some connections. Now, this is not scientifically accurate, right? I don't know how many connections one molecule of clay will make, but no. Now, let's say we were to, you know, get a pot and we were to smash. We get a stick and we hit the pot. Right. I will not be hitting this pot for demonstration purposes because we're gonna be in big trouble with the decoration team. But if we were to hit this really hard, what will happen? What is actually happening? Let's get this. Right. This is. Right. This is the stick. Right. And it's hitting the pot with a lot of energy. What is happening? The moment this touches this, what happens? The pot breaks. That's what we see. But what actually happens in the pot? Very simple. The energy that was using the energy that hit the pot, the kinetic energy or the energy that they used started to break the bonds between these molecules. So what do we see? While these bonds break, what do we see? We see a crack. So what cracked? What cracked? Or where did the crack come from? Is it because I hit it? Is it because I hit it? Or is it because energy was strong enough to break some bonds? Because you know how they say that, you know, you can break a wine glass using your voice. You've seen that, right? That people with really strong and loud voices can crack glass. Or people who can't sing properly. Either way. How does that happen? Nothing is hitting nothing, right? No, it's not the voice is coming out of the person hitting the glass. What's actually happening is, you know, that voice is supplying energy, which is able to break and shatter glass. Break the bonds between the sulfur dioxide. Between the glass particles, glass molecules. therefore it shatters. Because you can't really shatter glass. What you're doing is you're breaking molecules. You're breaking the bonds between it. Now, are there physical bonds? So am I actually breaking the pot? Okay, I took a stick and I hit the pot. Am I breaking the pot? Or do I feel that I'm breaking the pot? But really what's happening is molecules are losing their attractive force between each other. Isn't that what's happening? So instead of, you know, you're not breaking anything. All you're doing is you're you know, pulling two things apart. Nothing is broken. Now you could say, well, weren't the bonds broken? But there was no fixed bonds to begin with. You know, we're not going to get into too much chemistry and science because I don't want to go into details. But we know about these sort of bonds that atoms can have with each other. You know, we call it covalent bonds, ionic bonds. But these aren't physical things that are bonded. These are just energies that keep these two together. If you can supply an energy strong enough, now it breaks. So, did the pot actually break? Or did the bonds between these things, did the bonds between these atoms, are they no longer there? Therefore the pot broke. So the reason why we think the pot broke is because we, in our heads, we have one fixed object, this pot. Next time we see the image, is now broken. You're holding the stick. Now what? I broke pot. Like, for example, have you not seen, like, sometimes, children get blamed for things that they haven't done. Sometimes all they do is they bump into something, and a random thing falls onto the floor, and they get blamed for breaking it. The reason, because is something's broken, and they did something to trigger it. They feel. Therefore, they feel that, okay, because I bumped into this and the AC fell. We don't think, because I bumped into this, the AC fell. Because we see these as two separate, these two mutually exclusive events. Just out of coincidence, did I hit this and that fell. Same thing with this. The hitting is just a way of energy to be transferred. The energy transferred was absorbed by this, breaking which stops these sort of bonds. Therefore, you see it break. Not that I hit, pop broke. So can children actually break things? Can children break a mother's favorite vase? Or can the vase itself break itself, but the child is just supplied enough energy to break it? It's almost as if, you know, again, we'll come back to an experiment that we talked about many sams ago. Right, it was called the superstitions of pigeons. Right, we even shot a video about this. Which, there's a pigeon in a box, right? Pigeon in a box, and they have a place where food can be dropped. There's a timer that for every 20 seconds or every I think 40 seconds, food will be dropped into its bowl. Now, if the pigeon doesn't realize that every 20 seconds food is dropped, the pigeon will start to believe that whatever, because of my actions, they drop. So for example, if the bird, if the food came when the bird was flapping its wings, the bird will believe that because I flapped my wings, did food come. So what will the bird continuously do? flap its wings. Because it thinks, because I flapped my wings, did food come? And so it'll flap its wings. Luckily, after 40 seconds, more food drops while it's flapping its wings. So what gets reinforced? The idea that flapping wings equals food. So what am I going to do? Keep flapping. Same thing. We believe that because I hit because I hit the pot broke. And you look at it and you try, right? If you try with anything, I hit this, it broke. I hit this, it broke. Then you get reinforced that me hitting things hard breaks. But in reality, all you're doing is you're supplying energy. Energy can be supplied in any way. Now you tell me, can I break this glass just by hitting it? Can I do it other ways? I could drop it. I could, you know, heat this up and then put it into, just heating it up will be enough. It can crack it. I've done that once, actually. I didn't know about glass, right? I didn't know that glass, if you heat up glass, it breaks. One day, when I came to Holland in Sri Lanka, there was a power cut, right? And my grandmother had given me candles, right, to put around the house. One of my favorite jobs. And so I would put candles everywhere. And I mean everywhere, I mean even in three places in the toilet as well, but make sure there'll be candles there. And I remember there was one glass ledge. And there was a small, it was a glass ledge over the sink in the toilet. So me being very naive, I put a candle on the sink right under the glass. And then I left. Half an hour later, Mom comes to me screaming. I go into the toilet and the glass broke. Whose fault is that? Whose fault is it? My fault, because I put the candle there. See, in a very in a 2D way or in the worldly way, yes. But in reality, no. The candle supplied energy, which broke the bonds of the glass, which made the glass, which separated two sections of the so-called glass, which we call breaking. But did the glass actually break? Yes, I did get told off a lot for it. Right. But in reality, right, what happens? Breaking isn't something that me or you can do. You can't break anything. So I can break this by just heating it up. I can break this by, semi-heating it and plunging into cold water. That'll break it. There are so many ways to break it because this isn't broken because of me. I can't break this. Breaking can happen if any external force is strong enough to get rid of some bonds. That's what we call breaking. So, for example, you give this, if you were to say, give this to an animal to bite, some animals can actually bite through this. Humans, maybe not, but some animals can. Because they have enough force to break bonds. But we say we come and we look over, we have an overview of this and we say, you broke the pot because you hit it or you dropped it. I mean, dropping something onto the floor to break and it breaks, are you to blame? You can say because I let it go, did it break? But really, you letting it go is just one part of it. You can blame the rest on what? Gravity. But in the big picture, you see that, I dropped the glass broke. Oh no, what are we going to do about that? But in reality, that's not what's happening. That's not what's happening. See, if you can really understand this, your perception of life is different. Because let's say you're walking around and, you know, someone drops your phone. Something that you will realize is when people drop their phone, before they touch their phone, where's the first place that they touch? They go, because why? They think, okay, the phone has been dropped. And then they pick it up to see if the screen is cracked or not. But let's say you drop the phone, the screen cracked. If you realize this, you realize, okay, the bonds have broken. The bonds have broken, therefore the screen has been cracked. There is no one to blame here. So now you don't start feeling really sad and upset about this. Instead, you realize, okay, bonds no longer there, therefore cracked. Can I fix bonds? No. So what can I do? Can I use it? Yeah. Is it dangerous? No. So should I be worried? No. But if you were to see it in the other way, see it in the worldly way, you drop phone broken, I should be more careful, I have to put a new tempered glass on it, and I have to protect it. And so, for example, normally when you drop your phone for the first time, for the next 2-3 hours, you're now very protective of it. Right? You make sure it's on the middle of the table, make sure that, nothing's going to happen to it. For the next 2-3 hours, after that, you forget about it, and again, you drop it. That's beside the point. But still, you think that it's because of me. Or even better, if you had a sibling, or if you had a niece or a nephew that you've given something to, and they drop it, and say, for example, you give them a phone, and they drop the phone. Now you're very hesitant to give the phone again, even after maybe 2-3 years, because you think that they're going to do what? They did what? They broke the phone. Therefore, they're going to do it again. But in reality, what happens? You can't break anything. Nothing is broken. The pot is not broken. The phone is not broken. It's just a different arrangement. It's not broken, it's just arranged differently. Now these so-called bonds are no longer there. See, we say the bonds were there and the bonds are broken. You can't break bonds. The bonds are no longer. The arrangement of bonds are no longer. Therefore, you have a new arrangement. The phone breaks. All right, the glass cracks. There's a new crack there. If you were to feel that this was a fixed glass, now you feel it's cracked. But if you realize it's just a manifestation at this moment, then you realize, oh, it's a new manifestation. Now, that doesn't mean you start using a cracked glass, right? You know, a cracked glass doesn't have the quality of holding water, right? So you put water and it's going to spill out, so you're not going to use it. You'll dispose of it. But you're no longer upset because you realize it's what? Cause and effect. You realize that it's cause and effect. You realize that it's just a different arrangement. So, what can you break? See, when we talk about these little things, you have to be very aware. Because there'll be people who use this in the wrong way. Meaning what? I can't break anything. I'm going to drop this because I'm not breaking this. I'm going to push this over. I'm not pushing it. It's not breaking because of me. No. What we have to realize is, no, there's a reason why this breaks. There's a reason why this breaks. It's because because there was energy supplied, or it has gravitational potential energy. Does it fall and break? It's because this was unstable that it breaks. So you will be careful. You realize that I don't want to supply the causes for this to break. Not because you want it to be like this, but because, you want to use this. Or, it's not yours. So you can push it over and it will fall down and it will break. But you'll realize it's not me who's breaking it. No one can break it. All they can do is supply energy for a different arrangement. This is why we really hope that everyone who takes these messages will take it in the way that they're intended to. That's why, you know, these wrong views, these mitcha dustis, those are based on the Dhamma. If you take the Dhamma wrong, you're literally creating a weapon for yourself. That's why they say, you know, the Dhamma is like a snake. Right? If there's a snake, where do you hold the snake? If you hold it anywhere but the head, the snake will attack. Hold it at the head, and you're safe. So take this for what you should use it for. Use it for yourself. I think with great power comes great responsibility. I mean, this is very powerful if you understand this. But you have to be responsible. Meaning, understand it in reality. Understand reality as it is. So you can't break anything. Nothing can be broken. But then why do I feel it's broken? You feel it to be broken because you feel that this is what? This is a fixed pot. This is a fixed glass. This glass has a past. This glass has a future. See, this is a very good way of measuring or identifying whether you feel something to be fixed. Right? This is almost a rule of thumb. If you feel this to have a past, if you feel this to have a future, then this for you feels fixed. If you don't feel that it has a past, if you don't feel that it has a future, then you know it. Then at that moment, you realize it manifests. That's why, you know, when you are aware, you'll feel this to be a manifestation. But when you're not aware, you feel this to have what? To be fixed. You feel this to have a past and a future. That's why if it was to slip out of my hands, if you go, understand that you feel that this has a future, that it's going to fall down and break. If it breaks, not good. I mean, breaking not good is a view that you hold. Breaking is not good is a view that you hold. Is it not? Sometimes there are things that we want to break. For example, children, when they want new things, what do they want? The old thing to break. I remember that we've all seen the Nokia brick phone, right? The indestructible device phone. I remember that there's one of my good friends. They wanted a new phone. They wanted a touch phone, right? A smartphone. But they had one of these Nokias. So what they do? They would try to destroy it in every single way possible. And somehow, everything he tries, somehow the phone will somehow survive. It's a marvel of invention. Literally, he'll be throwing it, he'll be you know, dropping it, and trying to do whatever he can, but nothing too extreme. Something that can happen in real life, but not something that's extreme. Because he wants a new thing. So for him, the phone breaking is a good thing. And I remember way back, there'll be people who would purposely crack their screens. Because for them, it looks very cool, very good. Now, we can say that, you know, it's very stupid of them to crack a screen, right? Because it looks good. But for them, it's something that gives them pleasure. So it's breaking and not breaking is not the issue. Like, for example, I remember there'll be some children who would crack the back of their phone, right? Crack that, and then use highlighters and highlight the crack. So the ink seeps into the cracks, and for them it looks really good and very nice, and they'll show it off to other people. So breaking or not breaking is not an issue. It's not whether it breaks or it's not breaking. The issue is that you feel that what? It's either breaking or not breaking. You feel that this pot is cracked. again, you seeing, if this pot has a crack, you seeing the crack isn't the issue, but you feel that this used to be a pot that didn't have a crack in it. That used to be a pot that didn't have a crack in it. So let's say this crack was always there. From the date of manufacture, there's a crack in this pot. Don't we still feel that that pot is not right? That, you know, there shouldn't be a crack in it. That, you know, something must have cracked it. That it's a cracked pot that used to look like this. But from the date of manufacture, it just always had a crack. So why do we feel that that's wrong, the crack? Does the pot care? It was always born with it. It was created with a crack, or it was put together with a crack. So is there anything wrong with that? You see, if you come to see this world in the way of manifestations, then, you know, this is how it's manifesting now. This is how it's currently manifesting. Next moment, it's manifesting like this. It's a very wavy crack. Crack like that, right? If you get to see it as a manifestation, and now it's manifested differently. Now there's a massive crack. Now you're not affected by this pot. This pot can no longer affect you. But if you see this to be fixed, now a simple crack can make you feel really, really, really sad. See, it doesn't need to be your pot. This pot doesn't need to be yours. For example, this pot's not yours. But if I was to push this over and it was to fall down, wouldn't we all be really upset? But it's not your pot. Again, it's not because it's yours or not yours. We normally say the things that belong to me, if that breaks, we'll be unhappy. Not always. Actually, if I was to break something, even you would feel really, really, you know, feel really different about it. You know, it's really uncomfortable. You know, like last time we talked about, you know, if someone was to fall, you also start to feel, you know, you also feel really upset, you know, they fell down. Even if it's your worst enemy that falls down, you still feel, you know, because that doesn't require, this doesn't require to be yours. It doesn't need to be yours for you to be upset. For as long as you feel it to be fixed. For as long as you fear to be fixed, it is yours. Because when you see this pen, what else is there in your mind? When you see this pen, what else is there in your mind? Nothing. When you are seeing this pen is your world. So if something was to happen to your world, what are you going to feel? Right now, your world is what? What you are perceiving at this moment. So if you are seeing me, this is your world right now. Because it doesn't matter what happens. Technically, what's going on behind you, it's not your world. You can't perceive it. For example, right now, a person just fell over. Does anyone care? I mean, you do care, but I mean, it's not, you haven't perceived it yet. For example, you know, there could be a massive fire behind you. If it doesn't come into your world through your senses, you won't really mind. You don't know it. You don't really care. So when this comes into your world, this is your world now. Technically, this is who you are. You are the person seeing a red pen. So if I was to break this pen, you are going to become upset. Because that's your what? That's your world. That's your world. See, coming back to this, what we have to understand is this idea of manifestations. We have to really put this idea of manifestations deep and deep into our perceptions. Try to perceive everything you see as a manifestation, which doesn't mean you see it differently. As in, you see pot as pot, but you understand that what? It's a manifestation. You see mic as mic, but you understand it's a manifestation. Because if you see it as a manifestation, now this mic cannot affect you. Sound cannot affect you. Sight cannot affect you. Taste can no longer affect you. Because we're always looking for, you know, the perfect thing. We're always looking for the perfect thing. That's why, you know, when you are eating something, say you're eating cake, you're always comparing that cake with something, aren't you? Let's say for the Sri Lankan New Year's, someone's gonna offer you a chocolate cake. While you eat it, you're not comparing it with something. What are you comparing it with? Your idea of a perfect cake. So for example, there is when I say cake, what cake comes to your mind? When I say cake, what cake comes to your mind? Probably, it'll be, if you like chocolate cake, it'll be a chocolate cake. If you like, say, coffee cake, it'll be a coffee cake. If it's a carrot cake, it's a carrot cake. Depending on what you like, you get an idea. But if I say chocolate cake, now another idea comes up. Chocolate cake with chocolate icing, with chocolate, I don't know, chocolate glaze, something. You have an idea. Now, if I ask you, where is the best chocolate cake? Now, some of you say, at this shop, at that shop. Some of you say, you know, the best chocolate cake is homemade chocolate cake. But if I was to, if you were to dig it further and further, you have a model, have an, you know, this ideal chocolate cake. You know, my grandmother gave me a chocolate cake. That chocolate cake was the best chocolate cake in my life. Now you're comparing every chocolate cake that you come up against with that. Always comparing. Is this like this? Is this like this? Is this like this? Always in this job of comparing. Always comparing, seeing, oh, is this good? The problem is, if you eat a cake that is better than your model, what happens? If you eat a cake that's better than your model, what happens? Are you infinitely happy? Did you achieve, you know, your life's goal? That's it, full stop. No, now your model gets what? Updated. Now you're no longer looking for grandma's cake. You're looking for grandma's cake with butter icing. I don't know. Some sort of icing. Now you have updated it to be different. Now you're searching for that. But if you were to realize that what taste truly is, now you're no longer searching. You can taste, right? You put cake in mouth, you will taste cake. But you know the idea of cake is what? Where? In the mind. Now you're no longer searching for grandma's cake. Because you know that grandma's cake is only where? When was the last time you ran after an imaginary person? When was the last time you ran after an imaginary person? Do you? Now, you know, children, you know, growing up, some children, they have imaginary friends. I remember my little sister used to have an imaginary friend, and we used to make fun of this. But it's something that's very normal for children to do. You know, if they want, they'll be playing or they'll be thinking about this imaginary friend who can do amazing things, right? Fly, can teleport or whatever. Would you run after an imaginary friend? An imaginary person. The person doesn't exist, but you're just running after them. You wouldn't, because you know that it's just something that's made in the mind. You know that it is just a manifest. It's just something that is manifested in the mind according to the causes. So it is. It's not imaginary, but it is imaginary. In the sense that it's made in the mind. So why are you running after grandma's chocolate cake if grandma's chocolate cake is in your mind? Why are you going after your favorite song when your favorite song is where? You know, can't you play your favorite song in the exact way you heard it in your mind? Can't you play, you know, let's say your favorite song, let's take a very old one that we all know. Let's say, I don't know. My playlist's all gone now. Let's take a random song. Let's take, I'm thinking of a song that we all know. We all know Michael Jackson, right? Yes. Okay, good. Michael Jackson, one of Michael Jackson's old songs. If you've heard the song, that song can be played word for word, exactly how you heard it in your mind. So if someone was to sing it, and it doesn't sound right, what do you say? Stop. Just stop. But in their head, how are they singing it? Just like Michael Jackson. Or even better than Michael Jackson. I remember this was something that really happened. I remember that I had a friend who thought that they were really good at singing. Those are the worst sort of friends. No, they thought that they're very good at singing. So every moment they'll be singing something, and literally when they sing, like, dogs start to howl, right? Cats will run miles away, right? But they believe that they're singing pretty well. But the reason why we don't like it is because we're comparing it with what? With the original. If it's the same as the original, we think, oh, they're really good singers. If it's, you know, worse than it, we don't like listening to it. We may listen to it out of sympathy, but we don't listen to it out of joy. But if it's better, now what? You update this version. And you're like, oh, you know, the way they finished it was really cool, really good, really amazing. Now, when you listen to the original, you think, I wish they ended like this. So when will you ever be satisfied? Because every time it's updating. Updating. It's almost like you start searching for something very simple, and then it's updated. For example, when you were a baby, you were searching for one thing and one thing only, that's food. Once you got food, now you're searching for what? Food and mother. And then once you search for food and mother, now food, mother, and love. And then you keep going, and now updating. Now we're searching for, you know, money. How much money? You'll say first, you know, if you remember, you know, the first time you went to a job and you had the idea, you know, I just want to make, say, £2,000 so I can buy this. Once you get 2,000, what do you think? Just 4,000. 4,000 to 10,000s of hundreds of thousands of millions, people who get millions think, you know, want to get 5 million, 10 million, 50 million, 100 million, and then billions, and then billions not enough because, you know, billion is not a limit. So billions, 2 billions, 4 billion, 15 billion, 20 billion, 100 billion, then, you know, trillion, quintillion, and on, because it's always updating. So when can man be satisfied? When can man be satisfied? Okay, I eat chocolate today. If it's good chocolate, update. I remember this because, this is not to offend anything, but I just have a view, I had a view at least, that Sri Lankan chocolate aren't that very good. So whenever we came from the UK to meet our cousins, I'd make sure we pack good chocolate. And if thinking about it, that's the worst thing you can do. Why? Because once you give that chocolate to, say, my cousins, and they eat it, and then they update their views. Now they can no longer eat their chocolate that they're eating. Now what they have to eat? You know, that good chocolate. Because now they cannot be satisfied. Now you give them the best, now they want even better. Right? You start from these small things and then now they can no longer have it. They want better. I did that one year, the next year they call and say, oh, can you bring more of that chocolate? Why? Because their views are updated. Their model is updated. Update and update and update. See, when you relieve yourself from this pressure, right? When you relieve yourself from vexation and you get this feeling of pleasure, you are updating the views that you have. This is why they say, you know, pleasure is something that can really hinder your journey. Because you're updating it. So for example, you are having cake. You're eating cake. If you really are eating it to feel the pleasure. So, you know, usually when someone eats to feel pleasure, they take small bites at a time, right? To make it last longer. Right, to make it last longer so they can, you know, they can live every moment in this ecstasy of eating this cake. But when they do that, what happens is now their views have been updated, their model has been updated. So now next time, they can no longer be happy with normal. They need a bit more. Now they want cake again. Now, see, the best way to explain this is by looking at minds that don't have lots of views. Children. Children, if you were to give a child a chocolate the first time, they'll come back to you, especially come back to you for what? Not because they love you. Not because they care for you. Because they want chocolate. So now you're updated by saying, this is a person who gives me chocolate. If you give them a chocolate and a toy now, what are they expecting now? A chocolate and a toy. I remember when my little sister was really young, when she was a toddler, we went to one of my father's best friend's house, and he had given my little sister a yogurt. Ever since that day, anytime we go past that house, right, she would say, I want some yogurt. And if we went to the house and, you know, say my parents were talking and whatnot, she would go to the uncle, right, to go to the person and say, like, can I have some yogurt? In her very childish, babyish voice, she would ask for yogurt. Because now that's her model. Her model is this house, this yogurt. Now, we also have that. When you go past a certain shop, don't you feel the need to go inside? Don't you feel need to go inside? You're not going to buy anything, but you're just going to go inside. That's what you say before you go inside and you come out with bags full of stuff. Beside the point. But we've made this model. If I go here, I'm going to have this. Like there are people who say, you know, if I'm going to go shopping, I need to have milkshake. And so shopping equals milkshake. Now their model has shopping to be milkshake with milkshake. So these are models that we make for ourselves. Now, the problem with this is we can never be satisfied. By satisfying these models can only make these models worse. Worse in the sense that it updates. Now, this is not me saying, you know, from today onwards, let's go all the way to the basics. Let's not have any good food. Let's not have any good places to stay. Let's go back to the Stone Age, right? Where we sleep on stones. No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is be really, really aware. Whenever you feel pleasure, understand that something's being updated. That's not me going against pleasure, because pleasure is something that's part of the mind. Anytime you feel vexation, if you are relieved, you feel what? You feel pleasure. You can't stop that. But be aware, whenever you feel pleasure, that something's being updated. Right? You used to, say for example, you used to eat it this way, now you're eating it this way. Because now your moral has been updated. So when can man be satisfied? When is the point of, you know, end? When you do what, can you be truly satisfied? You eat the cake, the next moment you want that cake again. When can you be satisfied? See, this is why... this is why the Buddha says, you know, going to the full extreme and indulging yourselves in absolute luxury is a hindrance. But going to the extreme and having nothing is also what? A hindrance. This is why, you know, it's not about having or not having. It's never about having and not having. It's simply, are you seeing it in reality? Are you seeing what is really there? Are you seeing the world as it really is? Or are you seeing it? Are you seeing the fallacy? See, you have to come to your senses. And come to your senses and see the world for what it truly is. Right? So, we have the New Year's coming up. And those of you who will be at home and enjoy, and when you're with your family doing all these rituals and whatnot, do it. But be very, but see, try to see the reality of it. Right? Those of you who are in the monastery, right? When we do our rituals, you also what? See if you can see the reality. While you do everything, see the reality of it. When you're talking, when you're walking, when you're reading, when you are, you know, eating, sleeping, or when you are going to sleep at least. Of course, you can't think about it when you're sleeping. But when you're going to sleep, at least see it for what it truly is. See the world for what it truly is. Because if you don't, your models will just be updated. And now you are gonna see. It's a trap. It is a trap. It is one of the most vicious traps that there can ever be. Because you have a view. When you have a view, you start to, you know, vex for it. You start to feel this mental pressure for it. You get pleasure. View is updated. When view is updated, you feel more what? More pressure. Therefore, when relieved, more pleasure, more update. It's, you know, it's not a negative feedback loop. This is a positive feedback loop, which is basically a spiral. A spiral that literally spirals out of control. Because the more you feel, the more vexation you have, the more pleasure, the more you update. More update, more vexation, more relief, more pleasure, more update. So it starts off very small, and then it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until it becomes that, you know, you have so much, but you cannot be happy. See, all you have to do is while, you know, enjoy life while seeing it as it is. seeing it as it is. Your phone fell on the floor. When you pick it up, see it for what it truly is. You know, the chair that you're on broke. See it for what it truly is. Did the chair break? Did the phone break? Am I ill? Am I sick? If I'm not sick, then what is truly happening? I've got a cough. Am I the one with the cough? See, these are very good questions. That if you ask yourself, you are now opening doors for you to think. Oh, I fell over and I got I got a cut on my arm. What really is that? Did I cut my arm? What really happened? What is happening now? I mean, when it comes to your body is one of the most amazing pieces of miracles there possibly can be. You know, the body is really mad at you for feeling that you're in control. Because the body does so much. And you do, literally, the body does everything. And what you do is you just claim. And say, oh, that's me. I did that. The body does so much. Right? Whenever you get a cut, it heals. And then when someone asks you, oh, that your injuries have healed, right? Yeah, I know. I did that. Huh? You've gained, you've lost a lot of weight. Wow. Who takes credit? I take credit. Oh, I've lost weight. Yeah, I know. When your body is the one that tried its very maximum to do its very best to keep you alive, but you take the credit and say, oh, it's because of me am I still alive. Your body is a piece of miracle, right? The way, if you ever get to, you know, if you ever have ever learned the intricate details of the body, you realize how much of the body, well, first of all, you realize how the body is completely cause and effect. And all we do is we take credit for it. So whenever something happens to your body, ask yourself, what is actually happening? Now, you don't need to know science for this. I've had lots of people come and ask and say, you know, to attain Nibbana, do we need science? No. You don't need science. The reason why we talk about science is because because science is very close to the understanding of anicca. Not because science, you need science to understand anicca. If you understand anicca, you understand science. Same, it's that way. If you understand cause and effect, you understand science. Not if you understand science, you can understand cause and effect. That's why, you know, seven-year-olds in the time of the Buddha attained Nibbana, did they know about particles? Did they know about elements? No, they just knew that, you know, when causes come together, you have a manifestation. You have an effect. That's all they knew. So you don't need science. You don't need to be, you know, really, really smart or intelligent. All you have to know is, you know, everything in the world is cause and effect. Why am I doing what I'm doing? You know, wisdom is one part. Wisdom is only one cause for Nibbana. Determination is another. Determination. The amount of focus you put in, that's another. See if you put in the focus. See if you put in the causes. Because if you put the causes together, the effect of Nibbana will happen. You don't need to be the smartest person on earth to understand this. All you need is you need the determination. And you need the merits. That's why we started off by asking, you know, do you have the mentality of whenever someone helps you, do you want to help them back? Do you find anything, any way you can help them back? If you do, then you have the mentality of getting lots of merits. You have the mentality of gaining so much merits. So, in the next week, I really want you to really see the world as it is. Right, go and celebrate the New Year's. Right, if you go to these festivals, go to these festivals. Some of us were stuck here, right, enjoying our time here. But those of you who will be out and about, look at these and see it as it is. We'll be here doing the same thing. See, there's no difference between you and I. All of us are what? Our minds on a mission. The mission of understanding. Right. I do have some messages for you before we conclude, because today's Dakineyo, so I have to send you off early. So the first message I have is, number one, we have an ordination ceremony coming up. Yeah, you know, last ordination ceremony was like, I feel as though it was yesterday. But we have an ordination coming up, ordination ceremony coming up. It's on the 3rd of May. Right? Perfect. Well, we will have our senior and our greatest Anagarikas transform from Anagarikas to monks. And it's a very special time. So those of you, so I'm giving you this almost a month in advance, almost. So if you have anything, if you have a free time, I mean, to come to the monastery and see this, because it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. Although, you know, you'll hear us talk about ordination ceremonies every 2-3 months, yeah? It is literally a once in a lifetime opportunity when it comes to the image as a whole. Yeah, so those of you who can, please do come, right? And those of you who are online, like, if you can come and stay in person as well. It's a very special time. It's a very special time. And especially bless, a time where you can bless these Anagarikas as they take steps forward. Because they need all the help they can get to join one of the most greatest lineages in the world. And also we have the Hisatel Gavim, so oil anointing ceremony, which is on the 16th at the monastery. So that's also a part of the Sri Lankan the Sinhala Tamil New Year. If you're able to, we have no choice. But if you are able to, please do come and do this, because it's a time where that everyone comes together, and what happens is basically the Swaminarayans will put an oil onto your head. Now they say that it has health benefits and whatnot as well, because anyway these oils are made from very natural sources, like fruits and plants and leaves and whatnot. Again, I'm not the best person to talk about this. I have no idea. I really wish I did. I really wish I do. I do learn about all these amazing parts of these things that about medicines and whatnot. What do you call it? Ayurvedic medicines and whatnot. But it's that's not in my. I just don't know about this yet. But I will one day. But it's they say they have lots of health benefits and whatnot. So it's number one, it's very good for your health. Number two, it's very good for your path nibbana. Because I remember one year, we had three monks putting on three different oils. And I remember one year, Guru Hanuru would say, Ragin Niveva. Right? Amas Nayakandra would say, Dveshikim Niveva. Right? And third monk, Arakanakandru, would play Mohakin Niveva, which is basically, may you be free from desire, may you be free from aversion, may you be free from a delusion. And that's what they wished for, I think, every single person that went by. And I think that was stood there for many, many hours, wishing and blessing each and every one of us, which is absolutely amazing. So please do come, right? It's on the 16th of April, which is in only a couple of days.
Let's take a few moments to transfer the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Piris, listening Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today, first and foremost. Let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits of the Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to the generation of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. Lord, take one transfer merits to members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all the chief plates of all the chapters, who have dedicated their lives to no path and committed themselves to betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget, among them will be the monks and nuns resident in local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side, through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let's all take one transfer merits to Guru Sananse, as well as all the other monks resident at the monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Garikas attached to the monastery. Let's all take one transfer merits and express our gratitude to those who made great effort to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be there by translating sermons, sharing them with others, inviting others to join them. May the power of the merits, if any of them born on the wolf plains, may they redeem themselves and be born on the blessed plain. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the number of footpath, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Exalted among chants and merits that we require to our devotees, friends of the monastery, for sake of merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, and medicines, as well as those who pass in their know-how and their well wishes. May the power of the merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So, take one chance of merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed in physical and mental ailments, may they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's all take one chance of merits to the devas, brahmins, spirits, demons, primarily the Sakudeva, as well as numerous gods and deities, who are committed to protect and fulfill the sum of the sasana. Let's all take one chance of merits to our garden deities, who keep watchful eye of us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain the supreme bliss in Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take one chance of merits to our ancestors, who predeceased us, to always bring friends of home to us, in this even long journey in samsara. Let's all take one chance of merits to all the armed forces, as well as the police force, who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those lost lives in the war be the friend of foe. Rejoice in the merits acquired today. Also take one chance of merits to all those who have lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, long-time pandemics. Reminding ourselves among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this long journey in samsara. May by the power of the merits, if any have been born in the world plains, may they redeem themselves in born blessed plane. May by the power of merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain supreme bliss in Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, it's all resolved, making the power and blessing for all the merits acquired throughout the day. We've been a witness to the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arahatmanvases, Arahatmanvases in this blessed land. And finally, with the power of all the merits we've acquired throughout the day, you and I and everyone who made the program a success become an Arahatmanvase or an Arahatmanvase in the very life in the era of the Gautama, the Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessing of the Triple Gem be with you all. The Mahasangha now transfer the blessing to you. Raga ginnen midetndva Dvesha ginnen midetndva Moha ginnen midetndva Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukhita taravetndva Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukhita taravetnva Mamada siyalu loka
සියලු සත්වයෝ නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිතතර වෙත්වා. නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිතතර වෙත්වා. නිබ්බාන පරම සුඛයෙන් සුඛිතතර වෙත්වා. රාග ගිනි නිවේවා, ද්වේෂ ගිනි නිවේවා, මෝහ ගිනි නිවේවා, නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා, නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා, නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා.
තුන්වන්ගේ සුවිසි අනන්ත මහා ගුණ බලෙන් සියලු ලෝක සියලු සත්වයෝම නිබ්බාන ප්‍රමසකයෙන් සුවිසි වෙත්වා.